If you take a walk through the wetlands around Gustavus in the fall, it's hard to hear yourself over this noise. That's the sound of thousands of sandhill cranes. The Dude Creek Critical Habitat Area is an important resting place on their migration route. The rest of the year, the reserve doesn't look like much. It's a soggy parcel of land just outside of town. But it's special to the small community, which asked the state to protect the area 25 years ago. Now the cranes aren't the only thing causing a fuss at Dude Creek. The wetlands have become an unlikely battleground in a fight that could decide how millions of acres of sensitive land in the state are managed. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has the story.
In the same way that pet owners start to resemble their dogs, Hank Lentfer kind of looks like a sandhill crane. He's a bit gangly and angular with sharp eyes. For most of his adult life, Lentfer has been in love with the bird population and its habitat in Gustavus.
I first came here as a high school student with a biology class from Juneau.
That was in 1983. Now, Lentfer lives in Gustavus year-round. He's a steward for the Nature Conservancy, and he has a spot on an advisory group for some state habitat in Gustavus. The team's job is to give input on how to manage the Dude Creek Critical Habitat Area to best protect the sandhill cranes that feed there during their migration. Here's how the planning process is supposed to go. The Department of Fish and Game's Habitat Division sits down with stakeholders, and they go back and forth on what rules should apply to the land. Once division staff, state biologists, the Fish and Game Commissioner, and ideally local residents are satisfied with what comes out of the meetings, the rules are then turned into state regulations. Lentfer says it had been a collaborative process until this year.
It was amazingly non-controversial.
The Habitat Division issued their first draft in 2011, and it was pretty standard. In tone and level of strictness, it didn't deviate much from the state's other management plans. The new version that was issued this May did. A lot.
It was totally out of the blue. It was just came in an email saying, this is it. This is the new draft. Radically different from the ones that not only the planning team members had signed off on, but all the members of the community that had been given a formal opportunity to comment. All those comments had been very thoughtfully summarized and included in that plan. And that's all been gutted.
The management plan had been cut in half and was covered in red edits. Whole sections on scientific research and local knowledge had been stripped. When it came to things like geological exploration or hazardous waste disposal, phrases like will not allow were replaced with may allow. Everything that was prohibited before could now be permitted on a case-by-case basis and without public notice. Dude Creek is not desirable land for development. The ground beneath it is made of clay, and it's hard to imagine any resource extraction or even building construction happening there. The most high-stake issue the planning team had been dealing with was whether to allow four-wheelers. Alaska is full of controversial protected areas. Susitna Flats, where there's a nearby mining project, Kachemak Bay, where there are jackup drill rigs, Bristol Bay, where there are productive salmon streams. But Dude Creek's just not one of them. Lentfer says it felt like the state went from working with the community to working against it.
It seems ironic that a plan developed in such strong collaboration with local people is being taken apart by the very state government that is trying to wiggle free from federal control.
To find out why these changes were made, I talked to Randy Bates.
I'm the director of Habitat.
Before joining Fish and Game, Bates directed the now-defunct Coastal Zone program for the Department of Natural Resources. He's got plenty of experience in land management issues. So it's not a surprise to him that this new plan from Habitat has put Gustavus residents on edge.
There's a lot of red ink in this draft, and I think it's created a lot of public angst over what we're doing here.
Over the course of 2 hours, Bates walks me through the draft. During our conversation, he distances himself from the process.
I didn't have a hand in the redlining of this.
Bates's explanation for what happened is he gave staff his vision, and they went overboard. Still, there's one principle he stands by when it comes to any sort of human activity.
The idea is, can we get to yes instead of can we justify no?
Bates says that because technology and even the land itself can change, he wants to move away from hard restrictions on land use that could block development decades from now. Instead of denying activity outright, He wants biologists to look at a permit application and ask,
is that oil and gas exploration activity or placer mining operation or gravel extraction operation, is that going to prohibit the use of that area by the cranes or the moose or the fish, the reason for its designation? If it is, Habitat's first desire is to modify the project.
The changes made to the Dude Creek plan aren't just about Dude Creek. Habitat manages 32 special areas that stretch from the Bristol Bay region up to the interior and then down to southeast. That's 3 million acres of land that the state set aside for ecological reasons. Only about half of the management plans for these areas have been completed. Dude Creek happened to be the one that Habitat staff was working on when Bates called for a new approach to management. And he says that yes, some of this language is precedent setting.
The concept of these changes was unfairly foisted upon Dude Creek. Dude Creek I even talked to our regional soup and said, what kind of activities do you expect to occur out there? Randy, I don't expect to see much in the next 20 years. There's probably not a lot going on. We're going to see four-wheelers. We're going to see tree stands or wildlife viewing platforms, and that's what we're going to see. We're not going to see oil and gas operations. We're not going to see miners out there. So the concept of these changes has really affected a very small focus plan, and it's really raised a stir. If we were to implement this on the Susitna Flats or the Readout Bay or Ketchumek Bay, it would have been the same sort of blow up, but this is much ado about nothing in this plan in many ways. It affects these other plans probably to a much greater extent, and they were just probably mischaracterized or misunderstood as they came out.
Part of why Lentfer and other Gustavus residents are troubled by this new approach is that it's coming at the same time the Parnell administration is making an aggressive push to reform permitting. One of the governor's big priorities is a bill that sets a higher bar for appealing a permitting decision and makes it easier for the state to issue general permits that don't need public notice. The idea is to shrink a permitting backlog while encouraging development. But conservation groups describe the policy as an effort to limit public involvement on management decisions. Bates says Habitat's new permitting strategy has nothing to do with that.
We're not changing the planning process to exclude the public and just notify them. We still have every intention to run the process the way it was, soliciting input, sitting down, understanding the concerns. We're not cutting anybody out of this process.
But internal fish and game documents obtained by APRN contradict that statement and show even more drastic changes ahead. As of this month, work on all new management plans, including Dude Creek, has been put on hold. Instead, Habitat has been directed to revise all completed management plans in the Dude Creek style. Rather than go through the old process, which involved public scoping meetings, collaborative interagency planning teams, and a series of comment periods, Habitat will put multiple plans into one big regulatory review packet that will go out for comment once a year. According to an email Bates sent to the division, staff cannot discuss the management changes with the public without getting his approval. Even when talking with other fish and game workers, they are required to report that communication, and there are restrictions on what they can say. Sources within the department characterize it as a gag order. The documents also show internal strife within the division. During a May meeting, a regional supervisor asks if the new planning approach is putting federal funding for two staff positions at risk, since they aren't fully complying with requirements about public and agency engagement. In a July meeting, a staff member notes that the overhaul to the management plan process doesn't just cut out public input. It overrides language agreed to by state biologists. In emails, staff question the direction to mark any document that isn't explicitly public as privileged and confidential, which means someone would have to sue to get them released. Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell says the friction between Habitat staff and its leadership may be due to an internal misunderstanding of the new policies. The changes are in response to an order from the governor to make regulations more efficient, and that there's no attempt to limit public involvement. It's hard to think of Dude Creek as some politically fraught place when you're actually standing in the Crane Flats. I'm with Morgan DeBeer, who represented the city of Gustavus on the planning team. DeBeer helped work through some of the original questions on snow machines and hunting accessibility. He jokes that their original plan wasn't terribly strict, even with the cranes themselves.
You can still shoot them over there. I mean, it's just their habitat that we're protecting.
DeBeer's got more of a claim on the land than most. In the history of Gustavus, only a couple of families tried to homestead in those meadows, and they didn't have any success.
The first party back in the 30s was an aunt of mine, and her nickname was Dude, and that's why it's called Dude's Creek.
DeBeer is kind of a dude himself. He comes from a line of prospectors, and he makes his living by operating a sawmill, a few cabins, and a 9-hole golf course that is fertilized with goose droppings. While we're out on the crane flats, we talk about the planning process. The changes make him nervous. DeBeer is not worried about the near term, because the land is so inhospitable to development. There haven't been many user conflicts over the years, even without a formal management plan in place.
But if there isn't one, and if it's not a real solid one with good teeth to it, then you are open for some problems down the line, is the way I see it.
Plus, he thinks it's important for locals to shape whatever document comes out, since they're the ones who have to live with the outcome. As he's telling me about the crane flats, I realize DeBeer is kind of a funny advocate for them. The sort of things his ancestors did, homesteading, mining for gold, are exactly the kinds of activity that would be prohibited with a stricter management approach. But at the same time, DeBeer's position makes sense. His family ended up settling in Alaska to establish a life under their own rules.
Yeah, you want to determine your own destiny.
We finish talking and spend a few minutes listening to the wind. When we leave the flats, I nearly trip on something that's covered in grass. It turns out to be a small sign that reads, Dude Creek Critical Habitat Area. The only indicator you're anywhere special.
Need some trimming. I hope this isn't symbolic, like I'm cleaning the headstone in the cemetery, and this is the cemetery.
After he finishes clearing out the weeds, DeBeer smiles. He's not ready to go into mourning yet. He thinks, he hopes, this habitat should be around for a long time. He would just like a guarantee on that. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
You can find the leaked Fish and Game documents, a longer version of this story, and pictures of Dude Creek at alaskapublic.org.